Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, July 12, 2016. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. Good morning and welcome to the broadcast. We are streaming live today via the phone and internet. My co-host today is Dan Williams, Director of Emergency Services at Door County. Dan, hello and welcome to another stream broadcast.
Well, good morning, Joe. It's always a pleasure to do this show, and I hope we have a good topic for the folks today.
I think we will, and their names will obviously sound familiar for those that have been in EMS currently or some time ago. We'll be very pleased to introduce our guest today, Wisconsin EMS Licensing Coordinator Helen Poulin, who is responsible with the statewide EMS relicensure that just concluded for EMTs and first responders. And a little bit later in the program, we'll talk with Keith Wesley. Keith is an EMS medical director, of course, and author. Dr. Wesley is a former state medical director for the states of Minnesota and Wisconsin. We'll be chatting with Dr. Wesley about selective C-spine immobilization and using the backboard less often. The keywords there are selective and less often. But first, Dan, I wanted to offer you a few minutes to update everybody. I know the Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin conference is coming up here very soon. What can you share with us?
Well, yeah, we are on track again for the PSOW conference. This will be our 29th annual. It's September 14th through the 16th, so it's Wednesday through Friday, our normal time that we have it every year. Registration for vendors and for participants, attendees, is now open at psow.org. You can go there and register electronically. You can pay electronically as well, or if you just want to register electronically and send a check, whatever your system or your community allows for you to do. I think we now have accommodated all those choices. We tend to have a good agenda again this year. There's certainly no shortage of hot topics out there to talk about. And we hope that we'll be able to put a good package together like we seem to be able to do every year. It'll be a similar format that we've had in last year's, where most of the conference is open conference. We did away with our breakout sessions a while ago because there were so many good things and we had so little time to present them that people felt as though they were being robbed in certain ways. They wanted to hear this, but that was important for them too, the other thing. So we just do everything general session now, and it seems to have worked out quite well. Probably the most popular part of our conference is early on Wednesday, and then into Wednesday afternoon is when we do the roundtable with the services talking about the things that they're doing, anything that they're working on, new products that they might be considering, or questions they may have of other places that have, I just bought these monitors and, I think they're great or I don't think they're so good. And then it just sets up for the whole rest of the conference an opportunity for people to talk with others about common concerns or issues. So we'll continue that format, and then I think we'll have a couple of other good things going. So we'd encourage people to attend. It, even though it says Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin, it's not just for paramedics. It's really anybody who's doing anything at the advanced life support level. I've heard from many people, this is a conference everybody should be at, but we still have sometimes struggled with attendance. So we hope that we had a nice rebound last year, and we hope that that continues because I think there's a lot of information that people can use here.
Thanks for all your work with it, Dan, as well. What's the website if somebody would like to follow along and also check in when the agenda is ready to see who will be presenting?
It's psow.org, psow.org.
Okay, very good. Dan Williams, Conference Director, Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin, also hosting the program with me today. Thank you for the update. Today's program will run approximately 30 minutes. It's sponsored today by Jefferson Fire and Safety, Transworld Systems, and Savic Buying Group. Wisconsin EMS Live will continue. Our first guest is Helen Poulin with the state of Wisconsin. I wonder where we find her this morning. Stay tuned.
This program is sponsored by Jefferson Fire and Safety, providing high-quality equipment and service to fire, EMS, and police agencies from across Wisconsin, and manufacturer's representative for Lifeline Ambulances. Find them on the web at jeffersonfire.com. Having trouble collecting on past due accounts or your aging report continues to increase? Contact Transworld Systems and ask about their easy flat fee collection service that averages just $10 per past due account. With better than average industry collection results, Transworld presents an option versus writing off that $500 or $2,000 patient bill. For more information, go to PAW's homepage and click on Transworld's banner ad. Collections just got easier with Transworld Systems.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad. Or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
The most recent state of Wisconsin EMT and first responder licensing period just concluded at the strike of midnight on June 30th, 2016. If you didn't renew your state-issued license or certificate by then, you cannot work on an ambulance or provide patient care in the state of Wisconsin. Somebody very important to that process is Helen Poulin. She is the EMS licensing coordinator with the state of Wisconsin. Helen, welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin, and thank you very much for calling in this morning. Where do we find you?
You find me in Door County.
All right. Up in Dan Williams' neck of the woods. So, Dan,
yeah.
Stand by, right?
Doesn't get any better than that.
No,
yes.
It does not.
Yes. And it's a vacation. It's not an official visit. So that's the other thing we want to point out. So, Helen, I know leading up to June 30th, it was a very busy time, obviously, for you and the staff at the EMS office. Many thanks to you and the others involved in this. I know it's a pretty heavy lifting task, not very light either. It's 22,000 licenses out there that have to be renewed. How did it go?
It goes well. Every year we have to be a hybrid kind of as we go into renewals and keep changing and growing with the trends that are happening in the system. Lots of flexible content, lots of questions. People wait to the last minute, but by the time the midnight strikes, we had everybody processed that had an application in, so that was huge for us. That's our goal. We actually stay in the office until about 1 a.m. on July 1st, making sure that we have everybody processed that can be processed, because we're dedicated to making sure that our people are able to function and keep people working on those rosters.
Is there anything that you noticed this time around, Helen? I know you've done it a few times now with the relicensing and the biennium. Was there something that stood out different from maybe the previous times?
Lots of questions about flexible content. We need to have the flexible content added to the account before we can issue a manual process. That was probably shocking to some people. So that was probably the biggest change. Lots of people did their application before they actually had the education completed. That was kind of something that we didn't anticipate on. Right now we're in the process of rewriting some of the materials to assist for the 18-20 process and looking at starting renewals a little earlier and getting some of that flexible content pre-approved. It's very, very disconcerting and problematic when someone has entered their education and their education does not meet the Wisconsin curricula standards as outlined in DHS 110-07 and have to kick it back on June 29th because they don't have the education to support licensure and they had no idea. It's harsh to do, but it has to happen. So we want to try to get out ahead of that a little bit and make sure that that doesn't happen in the 18-20 cycle.
That sounds really good, Helen. You know, what does somebody do now if they miss the deadline? It's June 30th. Here we are on July 12th. And, you know, it's a couple weeks past the deadline now. What do you suggest to somebody to renew their license?
One of the things that we've been doing almost daily for the first couple of weeks through late renewal, starting at midnight on July 1, is we start sending out the late renewal and the reinstatement information to get that education in and get that late renewal done. It must be completed by December 31st of 2016 to avoid going into the reinstatement process. If you slide into reinstatement, it's two refreshers in the National Registry examination process for the assessment to be able to be licensed in Wisconsin at your level. And we say two refreshers because you need one for the 16-18 biennium, and you also have to plan on that second one for the 18-20 biennium, because right now the education that you complete will support your licensure for the 18-20 cycle. And we're got classes running now that are getting people ready for that 18-20 renewal cycle.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty tall task if you miss some of these important dates. So heed her advice very, very closely. Dan, I know you as a former state EMS chief for Wisconsin work very closely with Helen. What are your observations or points here? I want to make sure I get your perspective too.
Well, I think that they've got it down to such an easy task now that it's pretty, easy to make this all happen, and that's really kudos to Helen and the staff that surrounds her and works with her, although that surrounding might be a little stretch of the term because that's probably not enough people to form a circle, but you still do a wonderful job of allowing people to get into the system, making it easy. And, you know, I realize that there's still a lot of people who don't quite understand all the idiosyncrasies of licensure and why they need it in the forms and things like that. But I think that the office has done a good job this last year or so of getting out and trying to get that word out to people. But the system itself, I mean, we had people in our department that were handing me licenses like in February already because their education was done and they had all of their other things done and they made their application and they were handing me, 16 to 18 licenses. So I can't imagine it could be any easier for the user. Now, I know on the back end where Helen is, there's always these other little things that gum up the process and make it hard, but it certainly looks seamless from the outside.
Excellent.
It sure does. Yeah, that was a nice testimonial, Helen, to you and all the work that you and others have done. I know from my experience, you have everything lined up. It's a pretty seamless process, and you get your license printed within just minutes of submitting it. The certain criteria. So, Helen, what do you suggest if somebody needs to get in touch with the office? They have a question. They're kind of in this time period now where they need to get things tightened up by the end of the year.
One of the first things I would say is review the materials that was sent to you on what the requirements are for your late renewal. Contact your educational facilities to make sure that you can get the education so that you're eligible to renew, and then contact us if you can't get access, call the main line or contact the DHS EMSF web email so that we can reset your account and get you moving in the direction we need you to go.
Excellent. Excellent. Anything else? I know you're on the go today. Appreciate you calling in with being on vacation. Most appreciated. But Helen, do you have anything else before we wrap up?
Get your classes done early, renew as soon as possible, and get yourself squared away with your service and move on about having a great life.
That's right. Yep. Get you back on the rig and delivering patient care. Helen Poole, an EMS licensing coordinator, State of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for calling in. Enjoy your day up in Door County today on your vacation. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Joe. You guys
have
a good day.
You too,
thanks,
Helen.
Joe.
Thanks for everything.
Yeah, stop by.
Bye.
Yeah, have a good day, Helen, and thanks for joining in today with us. Helen Poolin, oh, just love her. Love her. She's so dedicated, such a dedicated person. Dan, I know you concur with that thought. If there's somebody in EMS that kind of is the glue that keeps it together, she is definitely it. Her passion is unbelievable.
Yeah, there's no question about that, Joe. It's just, she's the one source there that has been the real constant, cheerleader for EMS. And when Helen first came into this to that office, she did not have an EMS background. But boy, I tell you what, she certainly has a strong understanding of what it takes now and could not be a better cheerleader for EMS.
Yes, absolutely. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. We'll take a quick break, but pleased to introduce Dr. Keith Wesley. Keith is a familiar name to Wisconsin, of course, being the former medical director for the state. We'll bring Keith into the conversation shortly. We're going to talk about using the backboard less and also selective C-spine immobilization. This is EMS in Wisconsin.
Since 1997, Savick Buying Group has been saving members money through world-class buying power in the public safety sector. Hello, this is Savick Executive Director Mickey Schulte. With over 4,500 Savick members throughout North America and strong commitments from our vendor partners, we turn this buying power into products and services at the industry's best prices with agreements from Henry Schein, Zoll Medical, Grainger, and many other companies. To receive more information or get started today, contact the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin at 414-236-4192 and mention you would like to be a SAVIC member, or go online to paw.us/SAVIC, S-A-V-V-I-K. Best of all, PAW pays your annual SAVIC member fee so you can access millions of products discounted and get real savings absolutely free. Make the call, 414-236-4192, and join SAVIC today.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad. Or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Dan Williams. Have you ever been strapped to a backboard before? I'm sure you have as a part of your EMT or first responder training. How about being strapped to that backboard on a stretcher in the back of an ambulance being driven down a bumpy stretch of road? We can attest to how uncomfortable ambulances are to ride in, of course, but can you imagine being strapped to the board? It just gives me the willies thinking about it. Selective C-spine immobilization and using the backboard less has been a topic of discussion, and we're real pleased to have Dr. Keith Wesley with us this morning to talk about it further and hear his perspective on things. Keith, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Dan.
It's great to have you with us, Keith. This is something, Keith, that we've read in the EMS journals about, and I'm sure service directors may have protocols with this, may not. There's some risk in any time you deviate from something, and obviously you should be speaking with your local EMS medical director before making any changes. But what do you suggest with using the backboard less and selective C-spine immobilization?
Well, let me first kind of give a little history. How did we came to even be thinking about this? Well over a decade ago, emergency physicians were beginning to hone their skills of determining who needed spinal immobilization and who didn't. Many papers published in the Annals of Emergency Medicine, as well as other esteemed journals, showed that if you apply a set of criteria to individuals, modified to some degree based on maybe the mechanism of injury or their age or other comorbid conditions, that you could safely not immobilize individuals that, you know, traditionally they've just gotten immobilized because gut. Our initial training has always been mechanism of injury, and yet we've seen how that changes with the changes in vehicles and their vehicle safety. What was a fatal crash at 55 20 or 30 years ago is a walk-away crash today. And so the concept of selective spinal mobilization, again, the purpose of it is not to give you an excuse not to do what's right. It's to justify not doing something that would be inappropriate. And placing a patient in cervical collar immobilization or any type of spinal mobilization and then strapping them to a backboard has the risks of causing harm. There's quite a bit of literature showing that it, one, it doesn't actually immobilize the spine completely, and that's why a lot of people refer to it as spinal motion restriction rather than immobilization, and that it can cause pain. You can have pressure ulcers to your skin. It impairs your ability to breathe, and for that patient who has a kind of in-and-out consciousness if they begin to vomit and lose their airway, you're left with rolling them onto their side on the backboard. And so now there's more support through the American College of Surgeons, the American College of Emergency Physicians, and the National Association of EMS Physicians with position papers stating that if you apply the selective spinal mobilization criteria properly, you can, for those individuals that do need a mobilization, that a cervical collar alone is sufficient, and that you can then transfer them to the cot and transport them to the hospital. So that's the three-minute lecture that usually takes 2 hours.
Okay. Thanks for the abbreviated version, Keith. What are some of the benefits that you see as a medical director with selective C-spine immobilization using the backboard less often when it's warranted?
Well, I think the biggest one is patient experience. We know that being on a backboard and being immobilized results in pain. And, you know, emergency physicians have gotten much more savvy at moving patients off backboards and, quote, clearing the spine as quickly as they can once they come to the ER. That's not true for all ERs across the country. And there is data that shows that patients arriving on spinal immobilization and backboards and C-collars wind up getting more imaging than they otherwise would have had they not been on the backboard. And whether that's just because, you know, well, EMS put them on a backboard, it must have been for a reason, so let's send them to CAT scan and CT their head, chest, neck, belly, and back. Or maybe it's because they're actually starting to have more pain because of the backboard, and because of that, they wind up getting more unnecessary radiologic studies. So I think for the patient, it's about pain, but also from a healthcare perspective, it's about cost and unnecessary exposure of radiation to patients.
Mm-hmm. I know, you know, anytime you make a change like this, obviously you should be in contact with someone like yourself as an EMS medical director for the local service. Is there, as an individual explores this, looks at training, looks at writing protocols, are there some templates or documents that you would recommend somebody go to kind of dig into this a little bit more? Because I'm sure there's a few questions that come to mind, medical liability and negligence.
Well, there are. I mean, I would do it simply. You could just do a Google search for selective spinal mobilization protocols, and you'll probably find a ton of them. I certainly welcome any of the callers to reach out to me. My email address is docwesley@gmail.com, and I'll share you mine. From the issue of risk and liability, I think the fact that we have professional organizations substantiating the reduced use of backboards, and now this really applies more to the conscious patient who you can perform the selective spinal mobilization exam on, so they're awake, they can answer your questions, they don't have neck pain, they don't have any numbness or tingling, no neurologic symptoms, they don't have a distracting injury. And in those cases, you can just, if you just want to be on the safe side, put a cervical collar on them and have them step out and lay on the cot. You can use the backboard as an extrication device to slide them out. You know, but for the totally unresponsive polytrauma patient, I think we all agree that the backboard in speeds up the extrication because we need these people out of the rig and or out of the trauma and to the hospital. So I think you're actually going to see the issue on the other side of liability, and that is that when you're either electing not to to immobilize the spine or just doing it willy-nilly without clear, rational judgment that's based in science, you actually run the risk of, I think, greater liability exposure from that route rather than through the adoption of evidence-based protocols.
Excellent point, Keith. Very, very, very good. Dan, I just wanted to toss it over to you. Did you have some questions for Keith?
Yeah, I guess
or some
Keith,
of your experiences.
Yeah, if you have people, though, you know, it depends upon how quickly the hospitals have adopted to this idea as well. Because I know there are certain hospitals that, if you bring somebody in on a spine board, you're going to get your butt chewed, and there are hospitals that, if you don't bring them in on a spine board, you're going to get your butt chewed. So, what's happening on the doc front, if you will, to educate the protocol physicians in or the emergency physicians in the hospitals that we really need to be having people on spine boards less and not to be criticizing staff when they bring them in with just a C-collar on?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dan. I think that it really comes down to two areas. You know, for those EDs that are staffed by residency-trained, board-certified emergency medicine physicians, I think they already get it. The information is clearly already in their journals and is on their radar. The challenge is going to be for the smaller rural services that have excellent physicians working in the emergency department, but they don't come from an emergency medicine training program. They're family practice or they're internal medicine or maybe even surgery. And so they don't get exposed to this issue in their professional education and continuing education. So the challenge in that case is for those services is to talk to their medical directors and bring forth to them, here's the data from the National Association of EMS Physicians and American College of Emergency Physicians, and try to help educate them as, you know, here's the literature, help us be in sync, because you're right. If you don't have the support of your local emergency department, then you're just going to be in a catch-22 situation. You really need to work together with them.
So there really does need to be some homework on the EMS provider side to be an advocate for their patients, and if they feel like they're getting scrutinized at the hospital, they need to get that literature to the physician or the medical director of the ED or whatever. And it doesn't stop there. It really continues on with the nursing staff, because they've seen us bring these people in for years and years and years in a certain way, and now we're changing that. And of course, as we all know, change is always hard to stomach, and so that sometimes is it too. So I think it needs to really be a widespread educational program, and I think that's a process that EMS really needs to lead.
I think you're exactly right. And the other group not to forget is your first responders. You know, not every EMS also provides their first response groups. Here in the cities, where I have most of Dakota County, I have 5 municipalities that our EMS provides service to. That's 10 first responder agencies, fire department and PD from each of those agencies. Trying to, explain to them how we're going to decrease using a tool that they have used since the beginning of time in EMS as a more of an extrication device rather than a transport device is going to take time. And the time to have a teaching moment with a fire chief at a motor vehicle crash at 2:00 in the morning is not on the side of the highway. You get there, you accept the patient, put them in the rig on the backboard, and chalk it up to, well, we need to, bring forth some education. So can't forget about our first responders as well, because this is a traditional tool, and it's going to take some time to accept that it may not be doing all that they thought it was.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, you never want to have those 2:00 in the morning meetings on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, Keith, for the information. Dan, excellent questions. I do have a question from one of our callers. If you're calling in from 262, please go ahead with your question. Go ahead with your question from area code 262.
Yes, Larry Knuth. Good morning, everyone.
Hi, morning, Larry. Good morning. Good morning.
In the discussion with respect to this topic, it brought to mind the medical director's course for Wisconsin. Is this going to be reflected, or has this been reflected in that course content, this change towards the C-spine?
This is Dr. Wesley. I'm being quiet because I don't know.
Historically, as Doc Wesley, as you know, the medical director course has been years behind reality, unfortunately, and I don't know that that's any different right now. I haven't heard of a recent update of that course. So to answer Larry's question, I think it's probably something you should contact the state EMS office and see what they have to say, and see if there's an update or if there's one planned.
Why I ask the question is I'm thinking of services that bring on new medical directors, and of course they will be directed to that course, and want to have them at the cusp of what's happening in the EMS field operations. So yes, I'll do the same thing. I'll follow up and see where that's at.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah,
Larry.
I think that's your best bet.
Larry, thank you very much for your question this morning. If you do have a question, just press number 1 on your phone keypad if you've dialed in. If you'd like to send us an email, you can shoot it to emslive@paw.us. We have just a few minutes left with the program. Keith, do you have any closing thoughts around this, any recommendations to service directors as maybe they need to look at this more closely because they're not doing it yet?
Well, I think they need to look at the literature and look at the position statements that are out there There's been quite a number of articles in GEMS magazine, so I would go to GEMS online and look at their past articles that they have posted there. So first get familiar with the information, and then schedule a meeting with the medical director. Talk it out, and in most cases, the medical director is keyed in with the local emergency department, and they're the ones that are best going to be able to help you decide how to move forward with this.
Excellent recommendation. Thank you very much. Dan, did you have anything in closing?
No, I think that's it.
With this topic?
I think we hit the main points of the topic. I'd just like to thank Dr. Wesley for giving of his time to be on the program this morning. It's always great to hear his voice.
Great. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Joe.
It is. It brings back great memories from many days past. And, Keith, maybe if we could ask you real quick, because you're well-known throughout Wisconsin as former state medical director here, where are you at and what are you doing?
Well, I'm currently the operational medical director for Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul. I'm still living in Wisconsin. Have a wonderful service here. I also provide medical direction for United Emergency Medical Response in Wisconsin Rapids. So that way I keep my Wisconsin activities going. But happy to be here working full-time now as an EMS medical director. I got to say that as an EMS physician, this is the job, the dream job, to do nothing but spend every day with paramedics and EMTs out in the field, providing education, and no more night shifts in the ER.
Right. A beautiful thing.
Right. It's a beautiful thing. It is. Well, Dr. Wesley, thank you very much for being on the program. We sure invite you back when there's other topics of interest that you come across, and please join us again. It's always great to hear you, Keith.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, and have a good day. I want to thank you very much for listening to today's program. Our next live show is Tuesday, July 26th, starting at 9 o'clock. Our guest is Ben Ethan. He is the paramedic trauma program manager at UW Hospital in Madison. Ben will be talking with us about distraction techniques to help children with less anxiety during procedures and transport. I know in taking care of pediatrics, it raises the stakes, so to speak, with care providers, because it's typically an area that we don't get into too much until the time is there. And now how do you do it, especially with upset, screaming child or very, very concerned parents or relatives. So we look forward to chatting with Ben a little bit further. Dan, did you have anything else in closing?
No, I think that probably covers it all. Just a little reminder again, the registration for PSOW is open. Dates are September 14th, 15th, and 16th. We hope to see a lot of people there.
All right. Very good. Dan Williams, thank you for being with us on the program today as well. I wanted to mention that this broadcast was streamed live, of course, and it was also recorded. We do the program the second and fourth Tuesday every month, and you can refer to the PAW website at PAAW for the playback. You'll see it on the homepage on the right side. It'll say most recent podcast. Any additional information can be found at the PAW website, paaw.us. Thank you very much for listening today. Have a good day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.